14 years. I know that the dope that comes out of this city has killed a lot more than I have.
Welcome to Now Playing's The French Connection Retrospective Series.
All right, Popeye's here. Get your hands on your head. Get off the bar and get on the wall. Come on, move.
Hosted by Arnie.
I think he's dirty, but I don't know why.
Stuart.
Are you everything they say you are?
And Jacob.
Hey, bravo, the Americans have landed.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Not my city, you don't.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Enjoy while it lasts, my friend.
Today we're discussing Popeye Doyle, starring Ed O'Neill, Candy Clark, Matthew Lawrence, James Handy, and Audrey Landers as Jill, directed by Peter Levin. This is the Now Playing co-host who can be good or bad or anything you want me to be, Arnie.
I'm Irish. I can watch anything. This is Stuart.
And this is the co-host who has a lot of hate in him for one man, Jacob.
Do you have a lot of hate in you for TV movies, Jacob?
For maybe this one.
It is not weird that Popeye Doyle came to television. It is weird that it's coming 11 years after French Connection 2 bombed.
Yeah.
Like, this is a really long time. Usually, you have a spinoff thing, like, the year later, right? Baby Boom. I remember they had a show of that, like, within 2 years.
There was a show of that?
Briefly. Nancy McKeon.
Didn't last long.
No. But you strike while the iron's hot. 9 to 5. You get that out within 18 months. You don't dawdle. And yes, it has essentially been 15, 16 years since people were thinking about French Connection. How do you make a show out of that? It was an 80s trend. I want to just say, same time, in the heat of the night, a 1967 Best Picture winner also becomes a CBS crime procedural where, like, Archie Bunker is now friends with the fake Sidney Poitier and they solve crimes together.
It's funny you say Archie Bunker because I'm trying to think, how do you take Popeye Doyle and make him into a TV show that you want to watch every week? Because to me, that first film, that's a character study about a man that does horrible things because of obsession. He's racist. Like, I don't want to see this character every week. But yeah, Archie Bunker as a cop is how I figured they'd frame it. That was the best I could do.
And also in the 80s, cop shows were huge. Miami Vice, of course. But the one I went to, the one I loved as a kid was Hunter, if you remember Hunter. And so, you know, if you just take away the gruff characteristics that made Popeye Doyle Popeye Doyle and turn him into a generic NYPD cop, you can do a weekly procedural story.
Yes, you have to neuter it, right?
Yeah, not make it French Connection.
It will not have the edge or the production values of a movie. And I think that's important to hold in your hand as we approach the thing we're here to talk about today, which in some versions, I think it was released on VHS, as French Connection 3. But don't think of it like it's going to be a continuation of the two movies we've been talking about.
This got an actual VHS release because I couldn't find it anywhere, even in the darkest places of the internet. I had to find it in YouTube where I watched it. I couldn't choose 4K or 1080p or even 720. I had to watch this in 360p, which is probably lower resolution than it was originally broadcast in.
I think 360p is what old TV was. I had to watch this the same way, but I knew this existed. I swear, I mean, the copy I watched ended with Bryant Gumbel and Tom Brokaw talking about NBC News.
Talking about the housing crisis, how no one could afford homes in 1986, where you haven't changed at all.
Yes. So that was a recording from the original NBC broadcast, but I swear, this movie was shown on cable television in the early 90s because when Stuart said we were doing The French Connection, I knew this movie existed. I had seen part of this movie because in my freshman year of college, my roommates were really big into the movie Dutch, starring Ed O'Neill.
I saw it in theaters.
I liked that movie well enough, and I liked Married with Children. And one time Popeye Doyle came on, and I did not know The French Connection from anything. But it's named Popeye Doyle. That sounds funny. It's Ed O'Neill. He's a comedian. So I decide to watch this thinking it's going to be a comedy show. And when I realize it's some cop procedural, I turn it off within 5 minutes. But I have seen frames of this before And so it must have been on somewhere in the early 90s for me to see it.
Yeah, the headline is, we keep talking about the French Connection, but the headline is Ed O'Neill, dramatic actor. And of course, we all know this man because about 8 months after he shot this pilot, he books a sitcom that runs all through the 80s and 90s.
A formative sitcom in my life. Like, I watched this so much as a teenager.
And changes Ed O'Neill's entire career. His career started out, I want to say his first movie is Cruising. He played cops in dramatic movies. He did episodes of Miami Vice. He did episodes of Hunter and Equalizer. So it wasn't crazy to say, you're going to be Gene Hackman in the spinoff show.
Yeah, not all that long ago when we were doing Miami Vice, and I watched some of those old Miami Vice shows, I saw his episode. It was one of the first episodes. He plays a drug kingpin, and he plays it straight, and it was so weird to see Al Bundy as a drug kingpin.
Going back to our buddy cop series, some of us, I think, watched K-9, where, yeah, Ed O'Neill shows up in that Jim Belushi movie, and I don't know, he's kind of credible as a beat cop.
That was already, you know, Married with Children was already on. He books only comedies after that. Yes, K-9, Dutch, Wayne's World, Little Giants, and then eventually Modern Family. We know him purely for being a schlub, for laughing at this guy who is such a loser that he's going to take on an Oscar-winning character beat where, yeah, it's a tenacious cop that is obsessive and can't let his... I mean, again, I just think of Al Bundy just like vegging on the couch, doing nothing, cracking insults. The idea that he's going to run, that Ed O'Neill is going to run around New York.
Whenever he's ogling girls in this, though, I think he really taps into that Bundy character.
We can talk about how much Al Bundy is actually here on screen, but it is before he booked that character, before he cemented for an entire generation a different persona. Maybe it helps that he has Eddie Egan on the set, the same man that was the basis, the one that actually did the drug bust back in the 60s and gave Hackman tips that he didn't want to hear on the set of the 71 movie, is back to make sure that TV does him right, that he is here to be found in a flattering, if not exactly faithful, portrayal of himself. He had been doing that for a while. Egan had made cop movies with Robert Duvall. He actually wrote a movie. Consulted on Police Woman, consulted on Mike Hammer. So this was kind of his gig at this point. He was no longer a law enforcer. He worked in Hollywood, helping actors be better cops on screen. So he is here to make Ed O'Neill the best version of Popeye Doyle we've seen yet. And of course, in the age of prestige television, it wouldn't be outrageous to think that William Friedkin would come back and actually direct the pilot, right? You could get legitimate, theatrical, credible directors to make your show. David Fincher, David Lynch, these people come to television. It wouldn't be absurd, but because this is 1986, you're not going to get someone like that making this. This is just done by a guy whose entire career is defined by TV movies, after school specials.
Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
Fame, Cagney and Lacey.
Yeah, some of them are cop things, so I guess that gives him the quote-unquote credibility to do it. But what I'm trying to help people process is, if you come at this like it's going to be a theatrical movie experience in the ways that television can replicate, I'm not here to do that. I'm going to do this movie the favor of saying, I'm not evaluating whether this is a good French Connection 3. I'm evaluating whether this is a credible 1986 cop series pilot.
Is it selling me to come back every Monday night to watch the series? That's how I approached it.
And obviously that was the design, right? This wasn't designed as a movie. It was supposed to be the kickoff for a series. And someone at NBC just went, nah. And they aired it not even like in a time when people would watch. They aired it in late summer on Sunday night.
Oh, that is just crapping it out.
But it got good ratings.
It did?
26% of all TV audiences were watching this. It fell behind what CBS was, but according to the Washington Post, in a 1986 article I dug up, they said it did well on Sunday. And yeah, 14 million people watched. It's not a flop.
It didn't get it to a weekly series, though, so it kind of is a flop.
No, let's calculate what that means. There were only three networks. Fox didn't even exist. Most people didn't have beyond basic cable.
I mean, 86, there was, cable was starting, but I get what you're saying.
Now, yeah, I mean, understand there weren't a lot of other options. You watched ABC, NBC, CBS, or PBS, and that was pretty much it. And so, yes, that it got 14 million homes is something, but to air in late summer before the fall TV season even began is throwing it away. They knew they didn't want to pick this up. And yes, it came in second behind a Linda Hamilton mother melodrama on CBS. It got beat by a repeat. There's no reason for them to rethink their choice and say, order it to series. It was watched. It was processed. Maybe it aired a couple times in the 90s on cable. Arnie, I'm hearing you say you discovered it there. But largely, I think this is the forgotten French Connection. I don't think too many people connect Ed O'Neill to this series. It's weird to do, and I want to give as much kindness and room for this as we can by saying, I'm going to forget Gene Hackman and just focus on what you're giving me today.
And yet, I feel like there's a lot of callbacks.
This is kind of a French Connection remake in some ways.
Yeah, I feel like they definitely looked at what French Connection did and differentiated from a lot of the cop shows of the 80s by bringing in some of that stuff.
Yeah, again, Eddie Egan is here, and if he legitimized the first movie, if he was able to contribute to that, maybe he can contribute to this series, give it the flavor. I don't know, Arnie, give him the plot. If you can, we'll find out how much Popeye Doyle looks like the guy from French Connection.
I'm hoping I can understand what I see based on your plot.
I don't mind admitting, we've done over 1,300 episodes of Now Playing, and never in 1,300 episodes, if I had to go to my co-host beforehand and be like, I don't know what the plot is.
There's a whole email thread trying to figure out this plot.
I couldn't figure it out on my own. And so the plot summary is the best of what the three of us put together in an email thread beforehand.
I will just say I watched this movie very slowly. It took me about 5 hours because I kept having to rewind.
Did you have a bad internet connection?
No, I was just trying to figure out what was going on in this movie.
You're more dedicated than I am because I threw my hands up.
When a New York City model, Jill Anyard, dies of a drug overdose, NYPD Police Lieutenant Gregory Paulus wants to chalk it up to misadventure. But cop Popeye Doyle, played by Ed Al Bundy O'Neill, thinks there was more to this death. So he and his partner Tony Parisi, played by Matthew Lawrence, start to dig into the case. It turns out Jill used to host drug and sex parties for rich clients, one of whom was Jordan Ambassador Fahud Nazim. Popeye and Parisi tail various suspects to gather evidence and find a man named Arun Bardas, who Popeye calls the Weasel, and this man is working with Fahud. Then there's another man that Popeye calls the Shadow. He is Eitan Kellerman, who is, like Popeye, following the Weasel. Following up clues, Popeye and Parisi go to an apartment where Parisi is gunned down by the Weasel's girlfriend, Marta. Popeye kills Marta in self-defense, and Parisi spends the rest of the movie recovering in the hospital. Popeye questions the Shadow and finds out he's a Mossad agent. The Shadow is trying to kill the Weasel because the Weasel is pretending to be a Jewish revolutionary. That way, when the Weasel assassinates an American ambassador, it will harm Arab-American peace talks.
I'm just thinking of Pauly Shore as a terrorist. I keep saying the Weasel.
Cool, Hackman.
I'm gonna bomb you to oblivion.
I don't understand this plot, buddy. Popeye partners with the Shadow, Kellerman, to stop the Weasel. The Weasel breaks into the Jordan embassy and kills Nazim. The Weasel then goes to the hospital to finish killing Parisi, but Popeye and Kellerman arrive just in time for a shootout. Kellerman is killed in the crossfire, and Popeye is wounded, but he beats the Weasel in a physical fight. Oh, and who killed Jill Anyard? Remember the plot summary started with her drug overdose?
Does that get resolved?
Debatable.
It's left vague, but we can presume it was either the Weasel or Nazim. They say she had to be killed because she, quote, knew too much.
She should be doing the plot summary then.
Yeah.
And I'm left really confused as to what went on as credits roll.
As credits get started, I say I want to forget French Connection, but they're trying, right? They got the white titling on the black. They got some jazz music. The original composer is dead, but they've tried to replicate the way French Connection began here with the New York skyline. I remember in the first movie, they were just starting to build the World Trade Center. There's a scene where the French TV personality is doing a press junket, and you can see the Twin Towers going up behind him. Here they are actually standing completed behind the Statue of Liberty. I'm getting French Connection vibes.
And I like the score of this movie by and large. There's some parts that get repetitive, but they do have Brad Fidel here doing the score. He's the guy who did Terminator and Terminator 2 and a lot of James Cameron stuff. And the score to this is legitimately listenable at times, including this opening credit jazz stuff.
Yeah, it looks like the opening to a cop show that you would turn on in 1986 and not think twice about it being illegitimate. And yes, we instantly see our Popeye Doyle, Ed O'Neill, reciting Emma Lazarus inscription from the Statue of Liberty as he's faking homeless, and his partner. It's worth saying that Matthew Lawrence also went to Fox 8 months later. Do you remember Duet?
Nope.
Yeah, I watched that show.
It was their romantic comedy show. He was like the friend character on that.
Yeah, he was also an SNL vet, so is he supposed to be funny?
Yeah, I think so. But he's playing Roy Scheider, who was not funny in that movie and didn't have much of a character. And it's maybe kind of a problem. You would want to pair two people that have a chemistry together, maybe polar opposites. If my instinct was, you're making a Popeye Doyle show in the 80s, now that guy has to work with a woman, right? There's the chemistry.
Or a black cop.
Yeah.
He hates everything, so give him something he hates.
Yeah, you definitely want to have the idea of mismatched. Again, buddy cops, 80s. The fact that this other guy ends up spending most of this show in the hospital and not working alongside Popeye seems like a real mistake.
That's the confusing part. This is a pilot. You're supposed to be setting my expectations, what I'm going to see every week when I come back to watch this. Oh, okay, so he's got a partner, and now that partner's just going away? Is the TV show him and the shadow teaming up? Because that's what most of this film is.
Yeah, you know, one of the tropes of these cop shows is you start by having the cop's partner introduced, the cop's partner gets gunned down in the pilot, and then you bring in the new partner that they have to break in. So you could have done that where you're being true to the French Connection by bringing in Parisi. Parisi does get gunned down here. You could have killed him and then, yes, had Popeye with a new partner for the rest of the series, somebody who would be a little bit more different and a little bit more impactful than Matthew Lawrence.
But you say French Connection in 1986, a movie that was, again, 15 years old. I think the one thing that they would remember is it's got a great car and foot chase. So we're going to kick off this pilot with a very perfunctory car and foot chase pursuing the Deli Bandits, taking a page right out of Tarantino.
For 1986 television, this is not a bad car chase. It's not a great car chase for a movie, but for a TV movie, it's kind of exciting. And given that it's right here at the top of the show, I'm wondering, will this be the show? Will there be a lot of car chases here? No, this is going to be the only one.
No, this is it. They shot the wad. And again, perfunctory is the word. You know you have to do it. You know if you say French Connection, you have to have, these two guys run out of a restaurant. They robbed everyone's wallets. They've been going around delis robbing customers.
Yeah, are they just taking pastrami or what? Like, this is the most dangerous criminals?
Yeah, I think it's like Pulp Fiction, Honey Bunny and all that. They rob restaurants. And because that they kill a cop, steal his squad car, we have these two guys playing homeless now commandeering a taxi and giving some kind of chase. You're right. It's better than nothing, but not anything compared to what we enjoyed in the first movie. And it all ends up at the Pelham Hotel, which is, of course, a reference to another gritty 70s movie, Pelham 123. And they split up. We find out that these two cops are very much alike. They shoot first and ask questions later. They just have different feelings about it. Parisi is going to have a lot of guilt that he is going to chase after this deli bandit. He's going to grab a cleaning lady, hold her hostage. She faints, and thus he has a clear shot, takes it, but does not like the fact that he killed the guy like it's 1971.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Popeye Doyle's going to shoot a guy and just say, I love New York.
Yeah, you see, if there's a difference between them, is that Popeye is not bothered at all about, I don't know what you want to call it, police brutality, bending the rules, being a
murder,
a hard ass cop, you know, that we sometimes love in movies and shows like this that tend to get put on a pedestal in our entertainment.
I mean, it's a little different here. They did have guns. They were robbing people. It's a little more black and white.
It feels more justified. It feels more like self-defense in this case, as compared to shooting a guy in the back.
But he's very casual. The fact that I love New York, like it's a punchline, is what gives me pause.
And it seems to be what I think is going to be the spine of this episode, if not the series. It's a question lingering on the minds of the public. We have this whole throng of reporters that are going to run down to the precinct and ask why. Why did you kill the Deli Bandits in this way? And that their boss wants to give them a citation, which at first I'm like, does that mean that it's a mark on their reputation? You know, getting a citation could be a good thing or a bad thing. But no, he is saying that they are good cops that did their business, and the reporters are pushing back, and Popeye just doesn't care. You know, he's going to go to the bar, drink, and go get laid.
But they do bring up the French Connection. Like, they ask about that old drug bust and everything. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, you say don't think about the French Connection, Stuart, but they're going to remind you.
How does this compare to killing a federal officer, like he did at the end of that movie? Again, a fiction made for that film, not from the actual case, and letting a drug kingpin get away. They haven't forgotten all of that. And I guess, yes, this is the moment where if you were just watching something and were like, oh, Popeye's on tonight, you realize it's not the Sailor Man. They're definitely talking about that Best Picture winner from 15 years ago.
But yeah, Popeye is going to be a womanizer in this, like we saw in both those movies. There's some leggy blonde in the bar that he's going to just tip his hat to, and somehow that works.
Yeah, I'm supposed to forget about French Connection, but here we are at a bar. There's a lot of, like, eyeing people that might be into drugs and everything. It's that same scene.
And he wears that hat. They've kept the costume. He's still got the pork pie hat. It doesn't look as good on Ed O'Neill as it did on Gene Hackman.
I always thought it looked silly, like that was a joke that he wore that hat, but here it looks even sillier on Ed O'Neill.
Sometimes when I look at it, it makes him look more like Jeff Daniels from Dumb and Dumber than it does like Gene Hackman. But they're trying. They're trying to evoke the idea that this character hasn't changed. It might be the 80s. Maybe we care more about cops bending the rules, but he does not. And he tells his partner, go home to your wife. Don't worry about fatally shooting a suspect. This is the job. But that goes away. I wanted to say, if you were to step away from the show and come back, this will never be brought up again. There will not be another moment, I don't think, in this episode at least, where we are to question their morality.
No, it seems like a very straightforward cop case from that point on. The reporters fall out of it. You know what I'm saying by straightforward.
Yeah. It's definitely not a straightforward plot.
Yeah, nothing straightforward in this.
But I agree, it becomes the crime of the week. Most shows of the 80s are episodic. They didn't have story strands that arced over several episodes. We didn't have the patience for it. Frankly, people didn't even have VCRs yet to program.
Yeah, you couldn't tape this stuff. Like, you watch Breaking Bad, you can't miss an episode. That was not possible.
Hey, somebody taped this. We saw the VHS recording from 1986.
Yes, exactly. One of the 14 million had his VCR on, taped it, and knew how to put it on that YouTube thing. But yes, most people would not be able to stay with the series and see every episode, which is why reruns were still good business in the summer. But yes, here, they're going to make this a self-contained story that has nothing to do with drugs. The really weird thing I'm scratching my head about is, are they still narcotics detectives?
This is about terror in the Middle East.
Yes.
Which is crazy. This is geopolitics.
A dead woman, terrorism in the Middle East, assassins coming in, French drugs or any other drugs. I'm not making that connection.
They seem to be catch-all cops, which was a thing in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're going after Delhi bank robbers, they're going after murderers.
And then international terrorists.
They don't seem to be in a division.
Yeah, someone didn't pay for their ham sandwich, and we're chasing them now. That's crazy to me. But you're right. Let's just accept them as general cops that chase after whatever the storyline has been cooked up this week by this screenwriter. So, woman in fur coat, rich lady, gets dumped from a fancy car. onto the sidewalk. Her body is found the next day, and she's got a dry cleaning receipt and the coat that gives the name and where she lives. And this gets Doyle on a very strange mission where I wonder what is driving him. If he is not trying to find drugs, and he is not, I don't know, a good cop, more of a womanizer, is he doing this because he finds this woman hot? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, does he fall in love with her because he keeps watching these tapes, like these sex tapes she made?
Yeah, Jill Anyard is her name. Audiences at the time would definitely recognize her as a mainstay on the show Dallas. And Audrey Landers was some kind of TV star at this time. So she's doing them a favor by playing the corpse of the week. And he gets obsessed here. He goes and finds all her VHS come-ons. And like half this show is about him like sitting at home doing God knows what.
Yes.
Watching her. I think that this is, again, it's about obsession. But it's not about a cop that can't let a case go. It's more like a lonely guy who just really likes this chick.
Which is funny because he scored earlier with the leg model and he's talking about like hand model. So like he's able to get laid because of that funny hat that he wears. But he becomes so obsessed with this woman and I don't know why.
But it feels because there's the Al Bundy skin on all of this. It just feels like this creepy lout kind of character. It's gross. I guess it's connected to drugs because she was killed by an injection. There was some kind of OD. She didn't have any track marks in her arms, so she probably never had used heroin before. And the fact that she took this massive amount means somebody killed her. And that's why narcotics detectives might be given this case.
Or homicide detectives.
Right.
But we're supposed to think... I think we're supposed to think Popeye's a good cop because his chief wants to just write this up and he's the one pushing for the investigation. I think we're supposed to think he has some kind of sixth cop sense that lets him know this is a murder.
I feel like that's always been Popeye's thing. Like he just has hunches and works off of hunches. And
yeah.
Like, would that be the show is just, I got a hunch about that. Let me go investigate it.
Yeah, definitely with the French Connection, the way the movie showed it was just some people at a nightclub being treated too well. Why would you let these nobodies that run a diner have this much attention and have all these fans from the mafia sitting around them? That must mean something. Again, the hunch is she's hot. Man, this woman is hot. And again, maybe if they didn't have the scene of Al Bundy stopping by the newspaper kiosk and picking up his weekly porno mags from his good friend Sammy... I love that they included that, but that's a really, like, gross little detail that lets you know that this guy is not motivated by the job.
Well, there is something. I mean, I don't know how you got that newsstand man's name, Sammy, but, like, there's a moment where he asks him, like, did you make those robbers suffer? Like, yeah, there is a darker edge that I think they're trying to push that maybe people wanted to tap into.
Yeah. 1986 was not a dark time. It was Reagan. Television was about uplifting people and having positive portrayals all the time. And so I will say they're getting away with something. This feels edgier, grittier, more 70s than probably anything else on the air in 1986, which is when I started watching TV.
I'll agree. As somebody who watched a bunch of those cop shows, this does feel like it has more of an edge to it than the others. And even Hunter was supposed to be edgy. He was supposed to be crazy and a kill cop and things like that. And this has far more of that. Yeah, the skin mag scene was a head scratcher. It was like, are we supposed to be on his side because he's a womanizer and into porno mags? Is this supposed to be like locker room, pat him on the ass kind of stuff?
That's the thing. Did people side with Archie Bunker? I thought he was like the grumpy conservative that you never sided with on the show.
Well, here's the thing about Archie Bunker is he played to both households, right? He played the liberals who said, look at how well they nail a racist thinking. He looks like a fool. To them, Archie Bunker was an idiot, and it was hilarious watching him be an idiot. But to people that held deep-seated racist beliefs, he was speaking the truth, and they liked it. So everybody watched Archie Bunker, some as a hero, and some as a clown. I guess that, yes, Ed O'Neill's Popeye Doyle could maybe play that way. Maybe you think it's hilarious that he's this skirt chaser. Or maybe you think this guy's so pathetic. Again, he isn't cool. He's not a Miami Vice style cop. So you can laugh at this guy. He might be an object of ridicule, or he might be one of the guys from the locker room that you love having a beer with. I'm not sure, but I think they wanted everyone to co-sign on this behavior. But let's talk about, I want to say right now, I feel like for a TV transposition of a 70s movie, they more or less get all of this stuff correct. What happens next, I think, is where they get into trouble.
You mean when they get into the plot?
Yeah, well, again, it's a murder plot. Who killed this woman? And I feel like Jill goes away. Like, there's one scene where she has all these photographs of herself lying around. He looks at the back of a headshot and gets the name of a photographer who answers a few questions. But before it's all over with, we're suddenly in Middle East politics. Suddenly there are assassins from Arab countries and Israel running around. And I'm going, what does this have to do with the murdered model?
Yeah, I was so lost as to trying to follow this plot and really tie it all back to the dead girl, Jill. He keeps asking people about Jill and finding out about totally different things.
Yeah, there's so much time spent on, like, interviewing the photographer and, like, oh, she knew she would have to be a mistress to make it. Like, there's so much time spent exploring Jill, and then that's all going to go away because, I don't know, we're going to have a revolution in the Middle East.
Well, here's the thing. One thing to keep in mind about the Popeye Doyle of Gene Hackman was he was just kind of a lurker. It wasn't like he was Sherlock Holmes. He didn't, like, figure shit out in a way that made you go, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. He just was willing to stand on a street corner in sub-zero temperatures for 12 hours. And on nothing but donuts and coffee, he'll wait you out. So this show is him spending a lot of time following people down dark alleys.
I am shocked. Like, that original film, I did a lot of notes. Stakeout, tailing, chasing. And I was shocked that I had a bunch of notes like that in this one. Like, they are just going to spend time staking out and sitting around and tailing people.
I guess, I mean, maybe this is Eddie Egan saying this is what the job is, but they feel like they want to keep Popeye Doyle in that realm, which means he's not really figuring anything out. Which means, as Arnie says, he's mostly chasing after people. And what's most maddening of all is, like, they'll cut away before they even say something important. Case in point. We got to go to this bar. She has a matchbook from a private club that only exclusive people from embassies get into.
I got to say, that 80s rock is as good as that moon landing song in the original.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I looked this up. This band, Alta Moda, apparently too black for Canada.
Oh, they're Canadian.
They tried to have a legitimate pop career. Yes, they were big in Montreal, but because they have a black singer, she claims they didn't get the radio airplay. This is their only hit. American Chaser is the song.
I was digging it.
Yeah, they really paid for some needle drops here. I noticed Aretha Franklin was playing earlier, Who's Zoomin' Who.
Who's Zoomin' Who? I know, I hadn't heard that song in decades. But yes, so they're here at this club, and all right, they're going to shake down everybody here. They're going to rough up the manager. They're going to go into the bathroom.
It's not a black bar this time, but it's still a reference to the French Connection.
Yeah, they bust every man doing drugs in the men's room. They're going to follow a bartender home and see him do a drug buy and shake him up. And what do you know? What do you know about Jill? Cut away. Nothing.
Yeah, they were a step away from asking him if he picked his feet in Poughkeepsie. I mean, it was that kind of interrogation where they were both asking rapid fire questions, trying to intimidate him. And then does that bartender ever matter?
That's what I mean. So he goes, well, Jill was always in here on Thursdays or something, right? Tie it to Jill. We never hear anything that he knows about Jill. The next thing we know, they're suddenly following these two guys that look too much alike. And on this low-res video, I can't tell the difference between. This is why it takes 5 hours, is I have to slowly track and rewatch and go, okay, is this the shadow or is this the weasel in this scene? But yes, there are two guys on two different tables in this club. One is a Mossad Israeli assassin who is here to stop an Arab terrorist who is making out with his terrorist girlfriend in this bar and who is going to eventually going to be meeting secretly, semi-secretly. I mean, they meet in parks, but no one's supposed to know that they're there with a Jordan Arab ambassador. And that's the intrigue. Again, they try to do the cat and mouse. You'll see people like change directions at the crosswalk and They'll go on a subway again. There's a lot of following.
They do the thing where he jumps off the subway at the last second. You're telling me to forget the French Connection? I cannot. This is a remake.
Yeah, they are trying hard. It's shocking and almost impressive that they're trying to expand that very self-contained movie into the actual detective work.
I will say I am surprised that they're actually trying to kind of remake this for TV and turn that into a weekly series. Like, just do another case.
When I'm thinking about this as a weekly series, this is something different. You know, all of the bugging, all of the getting the spy equipment, the shotgun mics to listen in, the foot chases, the undercover thing. Yeah, this isn't nearly as good as what they did in the French Connection with Popeye following the French drug lord. But here, I mean, it would have been something different to see in a cop show. That would have been kind of refreshing. It would have helped it stand out from all the other shows on TV at the time.
Okay, but here's what they really need. And it's the most important thing they can do to help this series that they do not do. They're calling it Popeye Doyle, and so they think we need Ed O'Neill in almost every scene. And they give him nothing to play off of. He goes home to nobody.
He just watches those tapes over and over.
Yes, exactly. More and more. Like, you need a neighbor. You need to have a relationship with your partner.
You need a Wilson where you never see his face, but he gives you life advice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess Sammy is supposed to be the guy he buys his porno mags is going to give him some tips or something like that. I guess there are nods to it here, but I feel like cop shows, it's about teamwork. And Popeye needs people to play off of. There just needs to be other storylines for other characters.
I just don't find Popeye as a solitary lone figure interesting enough in this?
No.
Yeah, so bring in a neighbor, bring in Parisi, take him out of the hospital, have him actually be a partner. I need someone else because, and I don't want to blame Ed O'Neill for this. Like, there is casting, there's writers, but like, this is not written for one person to carry it. And Ed O'Neill is not that one person that could carry it if they were able to get a successful script doing that.
That said, Ed O'Neill is not terrible in this. I feel like after I get past the Al Bundiness for 15 minutes, he is a credible cop in this show.
I think he could have had a credible career being a character actor, just playing blue collar guys in the background. I think he would have done well with that.
But he is more comedic than Hackman. I do feel like Hackman had, you know, he put on a persona where sometimes, yeah, the Poughkeepsie foot picking stuff was kind of quote unquote funny, but like, for the most part, I found that guy to be kind of relentless, kind of serious, driven, work-driven. There's a lot of Al Bundy here, right? There's a lot of him just loafing on the couch and smiling. It's when the romance gets going, right?
It's when he's playing like footsie and Addicted to Love is playing. Yeah, that feels very comedic to me.
Yeah, when they want to get back to the Jill murder, and I don't know how the dots do not connect, because he's tailing Israeli and Arab assassins for a beat. And then all of a sudden he's at a strip club and there's Corrine. And because there has been these photo booth pictures that Jill took pictures in a photo booth with this other woman who is this stripper, she's able to fill in a picture about Jill as someone that came from the stripper life, but moved up to Park Avenue because she started wining and dining ambassadors and high-level political figures. But a lot of this is Ed O'Neill and Candy Clark, beloved for American Graffiti a decade before, making cute eyes at the restaurant and dancing to Addicted to Love. I don't know. Is this a romance we want to see?
Another current needle drop that couldn't have been too cheap to get Robert Palmer in 1986, so...
Yeah, that was huge then.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe she's the one he's supposed to be playing off of. At the end of this show, they're together. Maybe she'll be the recurring girlfriend. He's left his womanizing ways behind and just settled down with the stripper.
And how could she help him week after week? Because she's in the strip club, she can give him tips from the street. I mean, you want the supporting characters to be able to participate in whatever the storyline is that week. If she were another cop, I would get that. But this, to me, feels like the girlfriend of the week. I don't believe this is going to be a relationship that they would have kept on. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Candy Clark would have signed on as a recurring character. But this just feels like a fling and a distraction from all the storylines that I'm trying to follow.
And she is a tie to Jill, which I feel like a lot of this stuff doesn't have enough ties to Jill. because he keeps getting drawn away by the weasel and things, and it doesn't feel about Jill when he's interviewing the Jordan ambassador, for example.
Maybe that's because the writers didn't make this about Jill. Like, why was she killed? Because she knew that, like, crazy drug parties were going on or something? I don't even know if she knew about the terrorists. She just knew about the drugs. At least that's what they tell me. Like, they keep bringing Jill up, and Jill is nothing in this. She never reveals anything with her death.
Which, to be fair, sometimes cool mysteries, you start with, a storyline, and then it opens up to a whole larger conspiracy, and we step away from the entry point. That can be okay. But since Ed O'Neill is sitting around watching Jill before every commercial break, he's back playing those VHS tapes. If this is about Jill, if you're going to keep reminding us of Jill, then she needed to be a bigger role than, yes. God help us, let's get into these Middle East politics. I spend a lot of time writing down names and timelines and trying to track this.
I'm glad you did, because I wasn't going to. I thought about watching this twice, and I decided I just wasn't going to.
Okay. Let me tell you what I saw. All right. While Ed O'Neill is having his fun and, you know, having his gun in his ankle holster, footseed and what have you, Parisi is doing the actual cop work. Parisi is following the weasel. There were two guys at that club, and he follows the weasel to a storefront Jewish revolutionary place. A place where, like, radical Jews talk about Zionism and blowing things up and are kind of dangerous and scary. And we think, okay, this guy is Jewish. And then he is going and secretly meeting the ambassador of Jordan, who is Muslim, and they're talking about, why haven't you done this yet? What are we going to do yet? So why would a Jew and an Arab be colluding in this way? We will eventually unpack that the weasel is also Arab. They call him a Cypriot. He's from Cyprus, I guess. And that he is going to kill some character we never meet, and that will destabilize all the peace talks that are going on. That's as cleanly as I can make this.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be some rush to save an Israeli diplomat from assassination at the end of this, but yeah, we never do see him.
It's actually an American. There's an American named Nathan.
Sure. You watched it for 5 hours, whatever.
Yeah, I could, yes. So Nathan is going to be killed. Who is Nathan? Doesn't matter. You'll never meet him, and he's never killed. And they never even attempt trying to kill him. So that seems like a mistake. Why not make it Jill? I mean, why couldn't she be an ambassador? I don't know. There are ways to have brought the Jill storyline into this Middle East politics if that's where you wanted to go. But it is very much like they had two different episodes and they just said, make it work on this budget. And it's a cluster.
Yeah, agreed. Jill happened to host parties for this ambassador. And because this ambassador is having sex with American women, cheating on his wife, using drugs, that's an embarrassment, and Jill can expose that?
That's what she was going to expose? I thought it was the drugs.
Yes, this is ultimately about two Arabs having a disagreement about ethics, that one judges the other harshly for sleeping with white women and for doing drugs with white women. And so he is going to have both Jill killed, and I know that Jill's body rolls out of the same car that the Jordan ambassador is always driving around in. So he either did that or agreed that that should get loaned out his car so that the weasel could kill her. But that wasn't good enough. This weasel is still mad that this Jordanian ambassador, who is his friend and accomplice in this assassination that never goes off, so much so that he'd rather kill his friend than the person they were targeting.
This is really confusing even when you're spelling it out for me, let alone when I'm trying to get it dripped to me in this TV movie.
All right, well then let's just forget all of this and just say Weasel and the Jordanian ambassador are doing bad things, and Weasel is dating an assassin who just decides to have her own plot. She is going to call up Popeye Doyle and Parisi and pretend to be the ex-girlfriend of someone that got away from them 2 years ago. Doesn't matter who. It's not from the French Connection. It's not from this episode. Have no idea. His name is Easton, if you must know. I wrote that down.
Yeah, it is so crazy that they just are dropping the Jill case because they got a call about another case that was a couple years ago, and they're going to run down that lead. I mean, admittedly, It's their job. They can switch from task to task. They can multitask cases, but you don't normally see that on a TV cop show.
And this had nothing. She came up with this plot on her own. I thought this was the weasel telling her to do it or something. You're saying she just like, I'm just going to shoot these guys?
I don't know why you would want to involve the New York cops. I don't know why you would want to bring them in to investigate you closer. But maybe they know they're being under surveillance. I think they do.
That's what I thought.
So they're whacking the cops that are watching them. And the best way to do it is to let my girlfriend Marta call up, pretend to be Easton's old lady, invite them to an apartment that's blaring really loud Spanish music, and then while they're looking in on that apartment, bust out of the room across the hall with a machine gun.
I don't know how she missed both of them. She's going to get Parisi, but I don't know how Doyle doesn't get, like, bad assassin.
No, Parisi gets, like, 30 bullets in him. I do not know how he is alive. She, like, unloads the entire automatic weapon inside his body. He should be very dead.
I thought for sure this was the end of Parisi.
And now, Arnie, that you've said that cliche, I think you're right. You do this early. You do this before the first commercial break. We're investigating this thing. My partner's dead. What's happened? And then, yeah, you bring in the black cop, the woman cop, whatever cop, to have the new partnership.
The other advantage of having the partner die is you make it personal for your main cop.
Mm-hmm.
And you want that kind of personal story, personal stakes. You may not have that week to week, but the pilot is supposed to have a punch that really endears you to this cop. And we don't have anything here. This is just a job.
I agree. And what's hilarious is like then Popeye returns to the precinct and the captain is just like, why didn't you see the connection between this assassination attempt and Jill's death? I'm like, I don't. Why should he?
I wrote that down too and I put a bunch of question marks.
Yeah. What is the connection, sir?
And then they're like, the feds are coming in to take over the case. I'm like, that's good because I don't understand the case. Let the feds take it over.
Right. Somebody take a hold of this because I cannot track what is going on. But yes, someone is going to be killed that's an American that is essential to peace talks. The bad Muslim Arabs are behind it. But I think part of the confusion is that TV at this time, they didn't want to put labels on things. They didn't want to demonize the Muslims the way that they are, quite frankly.
Are you saying they were woke back then?
No, I'm saying that they were cautious. You'll see this throughout movies. They'll make up Middle Eastern countries. They'll say things that will obfuscate what's really going on. The politics of the time. You don't put actual politics in a TV entertainment like this because that's too hot button.
Not 1986, at least.
It pisses off too many people and it's just not good form. So we have this very obscure bad guy that, again, that are maybe going to do something bad, but really just have a personal problem about how much pussy they're getting. And it all ends at Battery Park. There's this long-winded people tailing each other in cars down to Battery Park, and we have Popeye and some cop who's pretending to be homeless that is never named, some woman, I believe, or a guy in drag, who has a bug on her, and they're able to get a recording, and now they have, I don't know, evidence to take back to the Jordanian ambassador. But this is the weasel and the Jordan ambassador plotting to kill Popeye.
And this is where I guess we're introduced to the Shadow, which I think is a name that was said at some point. I don't know if it'd been said yet at this point. But yeah, he's trying to assassinate. Again, I'm just writing. He's trying to assassinate someone. I don't really know, but he doesn't have a clear shot, so he can't pull that trigger.
Yeah, I don't know if these titles, The Weasel and The Shadow, are there to make this go down easier and be more understandable for a TV audience, but it actually confused me more.
Okay, I think it's helpful because what we'll find out is the weasel has different names. To his Jewish radical friends, he has one name. And then I think his real name is Barak or Farak. I don't even want to go there. Let's make it simple. He's the weasel. He's bad. And yes, this character who is not weasel looking, who's a pretty boy and is going to miss his shot here because school kids walk in front before he can aim and fire at either the Jordan ambassador or the weasel. It continues on to the subway. This is where we get that, I mean, again, a beloved moment from the freaking original movie is that idea of stepping off the train, stepping back on the train. They do a little mini version of that here.
Yeah, they're definitely looking at what worked for the French Connection and trying to bring in some of that flavor, and I appreciate that.
But would they do this every week? Every week someone like tricks Popeye Doyle on the subway?
I think so. I honestly think that you just make that a thing.
You think so?
Yeah, in the same way that Starsky and Hutch did a donut every time they had to chase, you know, the whole thing was their car spun.
Yeah, but that's a cool car move.
Yeah, this is their cool move.
I don't know that they would have done a subway every time, but I could see different locales. Maybe you do elevators. Maybe you do staircases. Maybe you do subways.
Hurry and jump off the elevator.
I mean, they do all of that in this movie, and I think that's what they're selling. And if you have a complaint with that, you probably sound a lot like the NBC executives that looked at this and went, nah, this is not a very good show. We don't want to do that week after week. But yes, I think that's what they're telling us. A pilot is telling you what people are going to be getting week after week. And we would have Popeye Doyle following a conspiracy, trying to overhear them with bugs, trying to avoid being shot, stepping on and off subways. And eventually, yeah, the guest star of the week, the Shadow, will get caught and tell you everything you need to know about his side of things. Basically, he's a Mossad agent, and Israel has given him carte blanche to shoot whoever he wants. And so if he thinks these Arabs are plotting something bad that will hurt Israel, shoot him. And when you're done, go to a Chinese restaurant and double date with Ed O'Neill, which is really, again, the lack of commitment here. That everyone was so fixated on the job that last time in the first movie. And now people are like, I'll get to it after I watch my sex tape and have my Chinese dinner.
It's funny to me the way Doyle keeps asking, do you like girls?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
Well, he wasn't cruising. I mean, again, he wants to check in on that. But yes, he decides to take this Israeli Mossad agent out for a night on the town. And this is when I know a whole lot got rewritten. Because obviously, if you have a main bad guy, Weasel, and his girlfriend was killed, and he blames Popeye Doyle for that, Weasel is going to kill your girlfriend, right? I'm going to find Corrine at the strip club, and this is going to be the end. She's held captive. You have to rescue her. You do all of that. They sidestep that. This is when all of a sudden he is killing the Jordanian ambassador, and he's waiting for Popeye back home and overhears Corrine call and leave an answering message about where exactly she's going to be at 11 o'clock and decides at 2 a.m. to pretend to be a janitor and try to kill Parisi.
Yeah, why was he trying to kill Parisi? Parisi is awake, so it's not like he's going to wake up and give evidence or testimony or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's recovering.
I'm hurting him because he's your partner.
Okay, but help me track this thing, because you watched this for 5 hours. Corrine calls at 11, says, meet me here. We see the Weasel leave, so he's going to attack him at the strip club, right? Why are all of a sudden are we running down the hall at the hospital to save Parisi? I don't understand what is going on.
Given the fact that it's already been such a struggle to try and keep track of this whole Middle Eastern plot, when in fact much of the TV viewing audience is not even aware of Arab-Israeli relationships and what they even mean, they don't understand any of that. But they do understand, I'm going to kill your girlfriend, and to suddenly to do this switchback.
I am so confused when they're running down the hospital hall to save Parisi.
Oh, lost. I'm just lost.
I thought we were going to have a big shootout at the strip club.
Yeah, that's what you do. You obviously do that. And they've done everything up until that moment of doing that. And all of a sudden, Corrine is at a Chinese restaurant, giggling it up. And he's now a janitor. The Weasel is pretending to be a janitor and rolling his mop cart up to the room where Parisi is on life support and pulling his gun out of a mop bucket and trying to kill everyone. It's a real strange, head-snapping, how did we get here? And it feels like several scenes, you know, and this happens. We had a script, there were three other scenes, we weren't able to film them, we ran out of time, so we'll just go without it.
Just have them run down the hall, they're there all of a sudden.
We have no explanation for why they're suddenly there.
But let's think about what you often say when we were reviewing TV movies a lot, Stuart, which is audiences weren't trained to pay close attention to stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You walk away during commercial breaks, you're cooking your TV dinner. So A, how could any casual audience member who couldn't spend 5 hours on this, had to watch it as it was live, follow this plot? And B, when this happens, I did get what you say, Stuart. Weasel bad. Nazim bad, Shadow good, and so you see the Weasel at the end here trying to shoot the cop. He's a bad guy, But I don't think they're going to pick apart why as much as we are, because they missed half the movie.
That is very true. And it's certainly true of me at this age, when I didn't understand politics in the adult world at all. You get used to labeling things good and bad. Weasel is a bad guy, and he's done a lot of underhanded stuff. And now this more photogenic man is teaming up with our hero to gun him down at the hospital. I guess then we just need to talk about base thrills. Is it exciting to see them run down staircases? Is it exciting that they get to this abandoned warehouse and have this shootout at the end?
I was wondering, is the weasel going to get away? Are they going to do that ending again?
Yeah, they could do TV series week after week. I'm chasing the weasel, right? He's the Phantom Fernando Rey that Popeye Doyle would chase week after week. That it would have the same villain, or, you know, maybe for special episodes. Every 10 episodes, you get another weasel episode.
But that's more of a 90s thing with the X-Files and the cigarette smoking man. In the 80s, you didn't really do that.
I mean, Hulk did that. I mean, they did have some... The $6,000 man had Bigfoot come back every now and then for a ratings boost.
Did he come more than once? I only remember one episode.
Oh, yeah. Three times.
But the thing I go back to is the TV series The Fugitive had the recurring nemesis, but... It seems really rare in the 80s.
I'm just digging the Donkey Kong moves. Like, his way of stopping them is to light a barrel on fire and push it down the staircase.
Yes.
Yeah.
I immediately thought Donkey Kong with that. I hoped Popeye would leap over it.
Yeah, grab a hammer or something. Yeah, that would be awesome. But, you know, it's just, obviously, they can't do, even if this were understandable, they can't do the kinds of setups. You know, again, with TV, you're working long days. For a short period of time, you can't get all the coverage, you can't film from all the angles, you can't get the special rig that's going to go down the hall and do the cool look. So it's just very basic. I mean, I guess what I would say is in the end, it's about three guys running around in the dark, and eventually two of them are dead. Not particularly exciting or adrenalizing.
I was surprised, though, that they did gun down the Shadow, and that Popeye is also going to get shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, edgier than... 1986. I would definitely say that this series is telling you we're trying to retain that 70s grit. Anti-heroes, a little less safe and pat than most. We aren't going to kill Popeye Doyle, but we will kill a guy that could have been his new partner or a special guest. Why kill the Shadow? That seems strange.
And the fact that when he does get to the weasel and chokes him to death, he's got to like sit down, catch his breath. There's something just not heroic about that. A little too real. And gritty.
Yeah, again, they should have had those reporters back. The ending should be the reporters asking, did you need to exert that level of violence again? Have that be the threat of the show. Instead, we get this cheesy, like it's a happy 80s cop show that suddenly Corrine is there taking pictures and bringing them, what, ice cream or a hot dog?
You explain the appeal of Archie Bunker, and yeah, that's the end for this. You could have this cop that's maybe a little bit questionable with its tactics, maybe a little bit racist and sexist. But then you also have the media in every episode, too, to criticize that and play it both ways. There you go.
Yeah, I definitely think you go with a different... But maybe this is, again, knowing that they were trying to aim for television, you don't end with darkness. That wasn't what 80s series did.
You end hanging out with a hooker, getting your picture taken?
Yeah. Everyone smiles and it's a freeze frame and they, you know, that's the end. You go out that way. Everyone's grinning, even though they're limping because they got shot. Parisi is alive, Popeye Doyle is alive, the stripper is going to be his new girlfriend, and we're all just so happy we're just going to smile and smile and smile until the credits roll.
So Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend Popeye Doyle? Jacob.
You know, we briefly touched on something that really kind of summed things up for me in this film, and that's how much do you really need to understand? Back when Now Playing did their James Bond retrospective, I went back and rewatched a lot of these films that I saw as a kid, and watching them as an adult, I'm like, Octopussy's about Fabergé eggs? I had no idea. Like, that's crazy. And so as an adult, I'm watching these plots. I'm like, wow, I didn't understand this film at all as a kid. But I also enjoyed them because there's cool gadgets and James Bond is cool and he's fighting bad guys. So I think there is something to say, like, do you have to understand the politics of this? I didn't. I didn't spend 5 hours figuring it out. I understood enough to know, okay, Weasel bad, Shadow good, because Weasel wants to do bad things in the Middle East. It works on that, but yeah, trying to enjoy this as a story. Like, Jill just kind of leaves Parisi, who, if you're trying to sell me on a weekly episode, like, I want to see the relationship between these partners that I'm going to get every week. The fact that he goes to the hospital for half of this is just bizarre to me. So, yeah, I don't need to understand the plot fully. Can I get into the vibe of this TV pilot that it's about a cop that uses questionable tactics to bust bad guys? I understand it on that level, and on that level, it's still not very entertaining. Like, Ed O'Neill, I think he is right in the right roles. I don't know if he's 100% right here. I don't think he's 100% wrong either, though. There is something working class about him, and Popeye Doyle is very working class. So, like, this is all just off a little bit. Again, I'm watching this in 2024. I don't know what the 1986 mindset is, but there's just not enough here to hook me to come back week after week, and that's how I'm judging this. Like, it's a bad TV remake of The French Connection, whatever, but it's also just a bad cop show that doesn't hook me to come back. I don't understand the relationships between the main characters. Yeah, is this gritty or is this happy? We're going to go hang out with strippers at the end and smile. I understand why I didn't get picked up. It's a not recommend.
Stuart. Yeah, Jacob, I appreciate the way, the lens you use to look at this, because it's obvious. It's an easy not recommend for the movie. Bad French Connection 3. The plot makes no sense. The directing is poor. Yeah, it's not good. That's not what I want to do. What I want to do is play TV executive. Is there something you're showing me that excites me enough to say, we want this week after week? People want to see Popeye back in 1986 after his long time away from screens. What can he bring to the 80s that would be exciting? That's how I want to evaluate this. The potential as a TV show more than as a standalone movie, because obviously the standalone movie sucks. And it's not uncommon. Pilots usually aren't very good. Some of our best shows start off really shaky and they find their footing as they go along. So all you really want to do is say, are there elements here that are going to congeal? Will this come together, even though obviously in this 90 minutes, we're left wanting with a lot? And I like the fact that they're going to continue some of these French Connection themes. They're going to be darker than the 80s typically were, with themes of police brutality, by any means necessary pursuit of justice. Ed O'Neill makes an okay TV version of Gene Hackman. He is not my problem here. I think that he could grow into the role. He's not great, but I think he could make it his own. He's certainly more of a lout than Gene Hackman, who, again, I just laugh that he would stand on a street corner for 12 hours a day, and this Ed O'Neill is 30 minutes on the job, and he's like, ah, let's go out for Chinese. I want a cannoli.
He's got strippers to bang and porno tapes to watch.
That's a double date. Yeah, he's less motivated to do the job. And again, I'm not even sure. Is this job narcotics detective? Why is he on this case? Why is he special than a regular cop? I don't know. Hackman was a tragic figure, and this is a Dirty Harry for television. And so what can you do with that? I think there is something there, but in the end, Ed's probably right to go marry Peg and squeeze out Bud and Kelly.
And Seven, who disappeared.
Oh, I forgot about Seven.
That was the adopted kid, though.
Yeah, that was late into it.
Oh, yeah, I remember Seven. That was brief.
Anyway, yeah, you know, Ed O'Neill knows how to get cheap laughs and complicated drama. I mean, TV wasn't even really good at that anyway. Not until we got Breaking Bad and Sopranos and the prestige television of the 21st century could we explore on the level that they're teasing a character like Popeye Doyle. He just wasn't ready for TV in 1980. And there's no crew for him. Most frustratingly of all, I don't like his partner. I don't like his boss. I don't like his girl. I don't like Sammy, the newspaper guy.
But you learned his name. You spent 5 hours to learn his name.
I did. And, you know, I'm just not sure what he could really bring to the project. You want to support Popeye Doyle by giving him characters that are colorful and have their own lives and storylines. And this thing is just flat. Again, it spends more time trying to replicate French Connection, the movie, than thinking about how those strands could be woven into a larger tapestry of a show. And that's why I'm going to say not recommend.
That said, I appreciate that it did try to rework some of the French Connection stuff into here. That it looked at what are the iconic scenes and action beats of the French Connection and how can we do that for TV? And my overall thought was, I was absolutely dreading watching Popeye Doyle. After watching the first French Connection films, enjoying them, knowing that this was made for TV, knowing that this was Ed O'Neill, knowing that I had watched a little bit of it in the 90s and did not care for it, even though I wanted it to be a comedy, because again, it was called Popeye Doyle. How is that not a comedy? But I was really thinking this was going to be atrociously painfully bad. And the thing I can say about it is, no, it is not atrociously painfully bad. It is a competent, if not confusing, made-for-television movie pilot. And it has all the qualities of shows that I did watch. Now, the thing it lacks is the buddy cop formula. It lacks the chemistry. It lacks the partner that would keep me coming back. Even when the shows were like Hunter always had, I think her name was McCall, with him every week. And so you'd have that interplay. And so here, having watched it, I think if the plot had been more straightforward, I would have enjoyed it more. I was left confused a lot by a lot of the Middle East politics that went on. But even if it had been a more straightforward plot, there wasn't a hook here that would keep me coming back week to week. And when you look at this as a TV pilot and with a recommend, the question we often ask is, would you have come back next week to see the next episode? And I wouldn't for this as an adult. As a kid, I probably didn't watch this TV movie.
I didn't even like shows like this in 1986. Yeah. There's no way I'd watch. I'm watching Alf.
It's always Alf.
Yeah, again, I was watching Hunter and Remington Steele and cop shows. Riptide, if you remember that one. But no, I wouldn't come back for more of this. I don't hate this as much as I thought I would, but I'm not going to give it a recommend either.
Right. And I think the ranking is obvious, right? The first movie, the second movie.
Yeah.
Both of them have their own joys. All of us liked the first two movies. This is very skippable, but not contemptible. It's just an effort they tried in the 80s. My question is, should they try again? Is there anything Popeye Doyle could teach 2024? Could they make another show or remake the movie? Is there something there that you'd want to see done again?
My feeling is if they could remake The Italian Job 20 years ago the way they did, somebody somewhere must be wanting to remake The French Connection, modernize it, and just make it for a new audience.
Yeah, don't you feel it's going to get neutered, though?
Well, here's what I would say. You could actually tell the true story. There's a lot of cops that worked on that. It wasn't just about Popeye Doyle.
You have a big ensemble cast then, like all a bunch of different cops?
You could do it that way. I mean, you could, if your interest was telling the story of the biggest drug bust of the 1960s, you could do that. If you have an interest in Popeye Doyle, I think you give him a different case. I think you just, you know, obviously law enforcement and how we want to be policed is a huge theme right now. It's a huge, polarizing, important topic that art could and should take on and could make for a really compelling show. I'm not sure if Popeye Doyle is the character to do that, but it would be interesting to see him come back in new adventures. They could bring it back, and I would definitely take a gander. I'd want to see one episode, no commitment on whether I'd watch the whole show. I don't want to see him turn into an idol. That's, I guess, what I think they probably wouldn't do. But it would be easy enough to do. They could make him seem like a heroic character.
You can't make Popeye Doyle heroic, in my opinion, but I think you could do, like, here's the realistic, this is the hard decisions cops have to make. When someone pulls out a cell phone, you got to decide in 0.3 seconds, is that a gun or not? Like, yeah, I think you could explore those kinds of gritty realities with policing.
Mm-hmm. I want that show. I don't know if I want more Popeye Doyle or French Connection.
But now that the French Connection series is done, this Friday, we have another show for patrons. Usually we do one show for patrons in a month, but this time we kind of had a paired twofer picked by Sean Ray. Last Friday, you guys reviewed The Driver, and now a spiritually linked film, Drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how similar are they? They're not sequels.
It's not a remake, technically, I guess.
If you squint at it, they do look awfully close. There's a family resemblance between the two, and we'll be talking about that. Which is better? What do they offer the car genre? Yeah, all of that stuff we hope to illuminate folks this Friday. Be a patron, find out.
Yes, if you're a patron of $10 or more on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Patreon, or on Podbean, you get access to over 90 bonus reviews exclusive to those $10 patrons. No other way to hear them. And yes, two available this month, The Driver and Drive. And then next Tuesday, The Podcasters Awaken. We are finally getting to our few weeks delayed review of Dune 2.
Arrakis is a far off planet. It took a while to get back from there.
It sure did, but I'm so glad that we're able to pull this off. Arnie can get to the theater. I've been covering the books. I hope you join me. Book 5's coming out very shortly, and book 6 as well. We'll get them all. But the movie is the one that I know everyone wants to talk about, and we shall do so next Tuesday. But one thing that I'm always grateful to celebrate is you guys, our listeners, the people that donate and continue to contribute to this show and keep us alive. How fortunate we are to have great people in our lives like David Kraft 1000, J. Clark Fisher, Fisher JA12. Hey, you. That's somebody's name. I'm not just, hey, all of you, but also, hey, you. Scott, Seamus Finlayson, S.G. Harsh, ZBGB.
And thank you to the Grand Canyon, a beautiful natural site that's taken millions of years to be created and also donates to us. So thank you.
I love the Grand Canyon. I didn't know they were a fan. I'm flattered.
Yeah, the Grand Canyon loves us. And Cox J, T. Costa 2176, Kiefer 51. Thank you to Wes Z 28, Chris Cross making us jump with your patronage, and Rudax.
Yes, thank you to these patrons. Now Playing Fan, Dimitri from Belgium, NJL Thomas 088, Maddie B, and T. Ward 1971. All you guys we listed are Podbean patrons. Feel free to change your usernames there if you're ZBGB and would rather have us give a shout out to something else.
Oh no. It's much more fun to try to decipher the word salad.
But thank you so much for your support of our show. We appreciate it more than the words we say can say. And until next time, au revoir.
Listen, asshole, tell me the truth. I was set up, wasn't I? Whose idea was it?
Thank you for listening to this Now Playing Podcast movie review.
Relax, you're having fun, ain't you?
We hope you enjoyed the show.
Best I've ever seen it.
And come back to NowPlayingPodcast.com next Tuesday for another all-new movie review podcast.
He's going to give us what we want.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
Do we want to tell anyone else about this?
Want more reviews like this one? In the archives section of NowPlayingPodcast.com, you'll find more than 1,000 in-depth movie reviews from our panel of hosts.
You know, it sounds funny, but they're my anchor to reality. A confirmation that I have a soul. I've always loved them. Ever since I was a little girl.
Support from listeners like you keeps Now Playing Podcast on the air.
83 policemen wanted to talk to me, and 52 of them chose to talk to my man instead.
You can donate directly by tapping the support button at NowPlayingPodcast.com.
Haven't you ever heard of inflation? I got expenses, you know!
Need more Now Playing? Subscribe to our In Focus weekly newsletter for exclusive digital download giveaways, celebrity interviews, behind-the-scenes insights, and more. Sign up through the subscribe page on our website and get it delivered to your inbox every Friday.
You owe me one.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
I'm strictly by the book.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
Working kind of late at the office, aren't you?
Now Playing is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
We're going to sit here all night if we have to.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
Yeah, what's he talking about?
I've got a man in Poughkeepsie who wants to talk to you. You ever been to Poughkeepsie? Huh? Have you ever been to Poughkeepsie?
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Ngonza Media Incorporated.
Honest. Quite stupid, but honest.
Ngonza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
The boys think we ought to cool it for a while, just to make sure there's no heat.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
Move calmly, move cautiously. You'll never be sorry.
Look, I've been damn careful up to now.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Never trust anyone.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Nothing going down. Get some sleep.
So he and his partner, Tony Parise, played by Matthew Lawrence, start to dig into the case.
Isn't it Parise?
It is with an E on the end.
That's okay. Coming into this, I saw Matthew Lawrence. I got confused with Joey Lawrence. I thought we were going to be like, whoa, throughout this whole thing.
That's a totally different show.
That would be fun. Ed O'Neill and Joey Lawrence in The French Connection 3.
How has that not been a sitcom?
So he and his partner, Tony Parise, played by Matthew Lawrence, start to dig into the case.
Hold it!
Popeye and Parise tail various suspects to gather evidence and find a man named Arum Barda.
Do you want help with that? That almost sounded like a cry for help. Arum Barda? I can't help you. You go down. Bye-bye. Yeah, I can't wait to get some more of these names.
Popeye and Parise tail various suspects to gather evidence and find a man named Arum Bardas.
Hold